I think people just need a reality check. I love the meme is like, it don't matter. Because you know, it don't fucking matter. Like, it's literally the whole point of the system. It is to make individuals matter less. You know, like, be less effective at disrupting the network on a positive or negative. The democratizing meme, all those, like, kumbaya things, like, leave them behind. All the democracy thing, leave them behind. It's like Bitcoin's anarchy, right? It does not have religious attribution. It does not have political attributions. It doesn't have fucking anything. It's just a mathematical system, right, with extremely conservative economic values, right, and full anarchy. First of all, if you don't want to lose your coins, just turn off Twitter. Go stack more sats and fuck everything else, honestly. Being worried about this stuff, it's when a lot of people sell. No, stop that. Just go fucking move on in your life. Nobody gives a shit. I feel like there are some very valid grievances. The arguments for removing the op return limit were very poor, but you know, there's a reality that filters don't work. But you can also just do nothing. Jesus, can just fucking do nothing. You don't have to do something. You know, Core has been an absolute clusterfuck on how they handle users, businesses. And then you have the dark side that they went complete fucking batshit insane. Like, you know, like once you bring CSAM, I mean, like, you know, the conversation is over. Like, really? Like, that's it. Just conversation is done. That's where we're at now. It's like, you know, both sides are absolutely insufferable. And so my answer to that is I don't upgrade my node. And I recommend everybody just stop upgrading. This idea of upgrading software is like, this is Windows mentality. You know, like I come from, you know, the FreeBSD side. It's just don't upgrade. You know, I have servers running with 7 years, 10 years uptime. I'm going to upgrade. It's not broken. There is no major vulnerability that matters. There is no major vulnerability in Bitcoin client that requires an update. Bitcoin is not about, like, you know, equality. Bitcoin is about fairness. It's a very, very different thing. You know, it's like we have a fair network that provides the same rules to everyone. It doesn't matter if you're king or if you're drunk or both. You have the same rules, right? Like everybody gets to enjoy the same rules. Nobody with more can rug you, right? But that doesn't mean that your voice, your node, is worth the same as massive exchange node. At the end of the revolution, the revolutionaries kill each other, right? Like, it's always like that, because like all a revolutionary knows to do is to be a revolutionary. You know, people, like, you know, it's the same reason why people come back from war and start shooting other people. You know, it's very hard for you to step out of that fight mode, you know, and accept that shit is just fine. You know, it's like the go walk on grass meme. Listen, I'm guilty too. I'm on Twitter shit posting and, you know, like participating in the pointless, like the many pointless discussions because it's entertaining. But at the end of the day, like, you know, I walk barefoot on some sand and I remember that, like, the coins that I lost in a boat accident are, you know, probably worth a lot, you know, and that's it. It's like, just accept that, you know, we're winning. Like, I know it's hard. Losing is clearly more fun for some people.
Greetings and salutations, my fellow plebs. My name is Walker, and this is the Bitcoin Podcast. Bitcoin continues to make new blocks every 10 minutes, and the value of one Bitcoin is still one Bitcoin. If you are listening to this right now, remember, you're still early. This episode is brought to you by Blockware. What if you could lower your tax bill and stack Bitcoin at the same time? Well, with Blockware, you can. New U.S. tax rules let miners write off 100% of their mining hardware in a single year. So earn Bitcoin daily while saving big come tax season. Get started at mining.blockwaresolutions.com/titcoin. Use the code TITCOIN to get $100 off your first miner when using the Blockware marketplace. This is not tax advice, so go speak to the team at Blockware to learn more. That's mining.blockwaresolutions.com/titcoin. Head to the show notes for links to find the show on centralized social media platforms and on Noster, or just go directly to bitcoinpodcast.net. You'll find it all there. And kind reminder that you can support this show by becoming a paid subscriber on Fountain. Or don't, Bitcoin doesn't care, but I sure do appreciate it. Without further ado, let's get into this Bitcoin talk. Well, NVK, dude, welcome back. I am a little bit offended that you didn't remember coming on the show before, but I'll let it slide. I think I may have been calling the podcast, like the official name may have been Another Fucking Bitcoin Podcast at that time.
Yeah, I think you had just started and you had a different name.
You were early, yeah.
It's been 2 years.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually wild. Time flies when you're making Bitcoin podcasts and nothing ever changes in the Bitcoin space. But yeah, I'm excited to have you back. A lot has changed since then. So it was like, yeah, it was almost 2 years ago. It was like beginning of 2024 when you came on. At that time, the kind of big debate of the day was around inscriptions and ordinals and that kind of thing. Bitcoin wasn't pumping quite as hard. You know, we were not quite so bullish maybe. And now here we sit at, I think just at the time of recording, we just popped back above like 120,000 infinitely printable fiat cuckbucks per Bitcoin. And somehow still people are finding things to argue about. And so I wanted to bring you on because you're always somebody who I feel you could probably be accused by some of being like a quote, a fence sitter, somebody who's not deciding to take a side. But I always view it as you tend to call out the bullshit on both sides of any debate when you see it, which is what everyone should do, right? But I don't know, man. What's your vibe check right now on the Bitcoin ecosystem? Does anything ever change, or is this just, you've been in Bitcoin a while, is this just the same, you know, same as it ever was?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's Bitcoin. I mean, there is no sides. That's the thing. It's so fucking stupid. Like, there is no sides. There is no parties. There is no voting. There is no, like, people just bring their, like, commie democratic baggage with them to Bitcoin, right? Like, and then they get confused. You know, like, there's a lot of people who gave people a lot of sort of like bad analogies for Bitcoin, like, you know, voting and democratizing and shit like that. Like, that's, none of that stuff has anything to do with Bitcoin. Like, Bitcoin is the most selfish money that ever existed before. Like, you know, in a good way, like, sort of like an objectivism way, right? It's like you sort of advocating, or really just protecting your bags by self-verifying on your node with the software version that you want is all that really matters. I mean, everything else is just noise.
Yeah, it's really funny. I had Tidwell on the show recently, and he basically he had a quote that I love, which was, you know, your relay policy doesn't make you a different Bitcoiner. It doesn't mean you support a different Bitcoin. We still have if we have the same consensus rules, we're still Bitcoiners. Like, we're agreeing on the same things. Like, everything else is just like, that's just like your, you know, that's just your opinion, man. But it was the title of our last show that we did together. I put it as, it was a quote from you, which is, Bitcoin is winning, stop worrying. And I thought that was pretty good advice. And I don't know what it is about like the human psyche that it's like Bitcoin trades sideways for a little while, and Bitcoiners, instead of being more externally focused at existential threats, turn more inward and start getting at each other's throats. And I don't know if
it's not a new phenomenon, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, at the end of the revolution, the revolutionaries kill each other, right? Like, it's always like that, because like all a revolutionary knows to do is to be a revolutionary. Like, you know, people, like, you know, it's the same reason why people come back from war and start shooting other people. You know, it's very hard for you to step out of that fight mode, you know, and accept that shit is just fine. You know, like, it's like, you know, it's like the go walk on grass meme. You know, listen, I'm guilty too. I'm on Twitter shitposting and, you know, like, participating in the pointless, like, the many pointless discussions because it's entertaining. But at the end of the day, like, you know, I walk barefoot on some sand and I remember that, like, you know, like, the coins that I lost in a boat accident are, you know, probably worth a lot, you know, and that's it. It's like, just accept that, you know, we're winning. Like, I know it's hard. Losing is clearly more fun for some people.
Yeah, it is funny. And I'm so sorry to hear about that boating accident. You should really be more careful when you're out there on boats. But I understand. I lost my keys as well in a boating accident. So if anybody sees them, you know, let me know. But I think it's strange to me that we can have, I mean, I guess, how do I say this? Everybody just seems to be talking past each other and not actually like, it's almost like this search for purpose and meaning and like this feeling that you need to, every person feels they need to somehow save Bitcoin. Like the Bitcoin is somehow right on the verge of dying at any given time and that it needs to be saved. And if you don't act right now, you know, it is going to fall into the abyss, never to recover. And well, it's just kind of funny. Like
we have a lot of main character syndrome, you know, like people want to feel important. People want to feel like they matter. People want to feel like their node matter. Like this whole meme about the plebs and the running the nodes, like a complete idiocy. Like it was invented for people to feel good about themselves, but like, no, that's not how it works. It's just like keeping a node powered on the internet, like doesn't do anything to Bitcoin, because if it did, Bitcoin could be siloed.
Right.
Imagine if node count mattered. You know, you could like just have a massive credit card like state actors do and just go on Amazon and run like a million nodes.
This is something that I thought this had been like discussed ad nauseum to the point where most people understood this, that like just the act of having a node online doesn't actually do anything meaningful. Like I went back to our last discussion almost 2 years ago. And I was looking through some of the notes on it, and we literally talked about, we went through economic nodes because there was a big amount of confusion at that time about what an economic node is. And here we are again with apparently people not understanding what an economic node is. And it's just like, I mean, is it worthwhile for you to take like the 1 minute to explain why an economic node matters? Like again, for people, for those who didn't see the first episode and haven't been paying attention, apparently. Like, can you break that down for us? And I feel bad even asking because you probably talked about this, you know, 10,000 times for you personally. But can you break that down a little bit for people so that they understand what you mean?
So what is an economic node? An economic node is a node that self-validates, right, transactions, right? So Coinbase sending and receiving transactions in their node in the name of, you know, 1 million users is a very important node in the network, right? They're essentially representing 1 million people's money, and it's relaying those transactions, is checking those transactions, right? So if they diverged, we would have a serious economic problem in Bitcoin, right? Can you imagine like a million people's worth of coins just takes a different fork now? That's a problem, right? So that is a node that has economic capacity and economic participation in the Bitcoin space, right? A plebe node with a few cents there, right? Like, does that node matter? No. I mean, I know it sucks, but it doesn't, right? Bitcoin is not about, like, you know, equality. Bitcoin is about fairness. It's a very, very different thing. You know, it's like we have a fair network that provides the same rules to everyone. It doesn't matter if you're king or if you're drunk or both. You have the same rules, right? Like everybody gets to enjoy the same rules. Nobody with more can rug you, right? But that doesn't mean that your voice, your node, is worth the same as, you know, a massive exchange node. You know, or, you know, Michael Saylor's node is going to be, you know, is worth a lot. Right. He's representing a lot of shareholders there. Right. But here's the funny part, like his personal node. I mean, like it kind of starts to diminish a bit how important it is. You know, what is he going to dump his 10,000 coins personally? You know, would that hurt? Like, you know, in the day trade candle? Sure. But does that matter? No. Right. Like this is why it's so important for people to understand that, like, you know, in the aggregate, you know, it matters, is rough. We never know what the number is. It's not possible to know what the number is. It's an ever-changing system dynamic, right? So, you know, if a single human being decides to fork off, well, I mean, good luck. You know, if a group of people want to fork off, but it turns out that they are not going to carry with them the hash rate, right? And a lot of the economic capacity of the network. Well, that's great to get an airdrop. right? We get to sell the coins on that are part of that fork, you know, and inform that fork that they're worth zero now.
We've literally seen this happen. I mean, this has literally happened at multiple times.
That's correct. And, you know, so I think people just need a reality check. It's like, you know, I love the meme. It's like, you know, I don't matter. Because you don't fucking matter. Like, it's literally the whole point of the system. It is to make individuals matter less. You know, like, be less effective at disrupting the network on a positive or negative. You know, like, and, you know, like, the democratizing meme, all those, like, kumbaya things, like, leave them behind. All the democracy thing, leave them behind. It's like Bitcoin's anarchy, right? It does not have religious attribution. It does not have political attributions. It doesn't have fucking anything. It's just a mathematical system, right, with extremely conservative economic values, right, and full anarchy.
What if you could lower your tax bill and stack Bitcoin at the same time? Well, by mining Bitcoin with Blockware, you can. New tax guidelines from the Big Beautiful Bill allow American miners to write off 100% of the cost of their mining hardware in a single tax year. That is right, a 100% write-off. So if you have $100,000 in capital gains or income, you can purchase $100,000 worth of miners and offset it entirely. Blockware's mining as a service enables you to start mining right now without lifting a finger. Blockware handles everything from securing the miners to sourcing low-cost power to configuring the mining pool. They do it all. You get to stack Bitcoin at a discount every single day, while also saving big come tax season. Get started today by going to mining.blockwaresolutions.com/titcoin. Again, that's mining.blockwaresolutions.com/titcoin. Use the code titcoin to get $100 off your first miner when using the Blockware marketplace. Of course, none of this is tax advice from me. Go speak with the team at Blockware to learn more. One more time, that is mining.blockwaresolutions.com/titcoin. Yeah, well, I think that's tough for people to actually grasp because we don't have anything that looks like that. There's nothing that's like that in the fiat system to the extent that Bitcoin is. Like, this is a new paradigm. So I empathize with people, and obviously I didn't understand it right away. You know, like, you know, the only person who understood it right away, I guess, was Satoshi. Everybody else had to, you know, kind of like,
we all get it wrong.
Secondhand, maybe.
It's totally like, it's a very complicated new paradigm.
Yeah.
Like, it's very similar to, you know, like, oh, there is electricity now. There wasn't before. It's like, you know, is this way witchcraft, right? Like, people were confused for fucking 100 years, right? Like, I mean, the posters of when the electricity was sort of like starting to be publicized are amazing. It's like, oh my God, this is witchcraft. Oh, you touch, you die. You know, it's like, yeah, you know, that's how it works. It's either accept that this thing is awesome and it's going to go somewhere. So you have that sort of like a bit of a faith that the system will go somewhere. You have some belief. You do that with a lot of agency by reading what you can understand, you know, and you essentially have a long position on it, right? Or don't. Nobody gives a shit. Like, you know, it's like, sorry, we don't need you. You know, I know it sucks to hear it, but we don't need you. We don't need anybody. We don't need Core. We don't need Knots. We don't need anybody. This thing's going to keep, like, TikTok, another block. I'm still running client 22. It works. You know, does it work for Lightning nodes? No, but I'm not running Lightning. I'm talking about Bitcoin base layer. It works, right? You know, is it nice to have Lightning work? Yes. You know, should we change Bitcoin to change Bitcoin even further to make Lightning work? Probably not. You know, it's like, you have a system that works. Like, have some fucking respect.
I think it's hard for people to say or to acknowledge that, oh, it's going to be fine without me. Like, right, sure, does it need everyone in the collective to use it to exist? Like, if nobody was using Bitcoin, yeah, it wouldn't matter anyway, right? But we're all here. But you as an individual, like, you're not going to save Bitcoin. it's admirable.
No, you're not to, here to save like, Bitcoin. Just got here and I'm here to save Bitcoin. No, you're not. No, you're not. And everybody finds it out fast. And if they don't, they rage quit.
Yeah. Are we about to enter a season of rage quitting?
Oh, absolutely. I can totally see it. I already have a personal list just for the fun of it. I already have a list of people I think will quit.
Got it ready to go. Okay.
Personal wagers. I don't publicize these things. I don't wish harm on anyone. I love all these people. Like, I really do. Like, I think, you know, everybody is like, you know, regardless of their role, you know, it takes many types. It takes many kinds of people to build something huge, right? Yeah. So, you know, in that sense, I love everybody. But realistically speaking, you know, like, we know that people will not be able to accept and they will rage quit. It's just the natural course of Bitcoin.
I had to bring up this.
A poster. It's one of my favorite posters.
Old electricity. It's amazing. Like, you just look at this, you know, I mean, the guy, I love the skull that's in the, on the, you know, electrical pole, just for added benefit, the light bulb, like, it's all just incredible. You got the constable running away from it, you know, just amazing stuff. And that's, I feel like that's kind of where we're at right now. It's like, everyone's literally going to die and Bitcoin is going to fail if we don't do something right now.
And it's, I mean, when you go hyperbolic on Bitcoin, you tend to lose the crowd. Now, don't lose the audience. Don't lose the audience. You know, because once you lose the audience, it's very, very hard to get it back, right? And I think, like, you know, both sides made some good arguments. Both sides made terrible arguments. And now both sides are losing the audience.
Yeah. Because I think people are just, the average pleb out there is just tired of it. The suit coiners haven't cared this entire time. Like, they're,
well, you know, because they know it's working.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, they did their due diligence, right? They saw the blocks are coming, the clients are working, you know, like, the fuck they care? All you have to do is open your node once in a while to sync it, check the next few transactions that went in your treasury are good. They're good. Great. Close the laptop. Move on.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, meanwhile, plebs are whipping themselves into a frenzy or being whipped into a frenzy. I don't know which one it is. It seems to me, I mean, so you've, I think, done a good job of calling out on both, again, quote, both sides. I'm using this just because this is the way it's being talked about. But on, quote, both sides of this, quote, debate, calling out what you see as kind of improper or just bad, you know, decision-making processes. Is it worthwhile to talk about that at all in terms of like what, okay, listen, guys, here's, if you want to make it through this without losing your mind and rage quitting, here's how this conversation could have been approached a bit better. Do you want to talk about that at all? Or is it, we can also skip it because I'm good with that too.
I mean, I can put like a very small 2 cents. It's sure. Just like, I mean, listen, who am I to tell people what to do? But, it's like, first of all, if you don't want to lose your coins, just turn off Twitter. Go stack more sats and fuck everything else, honestly. Like, you know, being worried about this stuff, it's when a lot of people sell. I remember the DMs when, you know, UASF was happening and people were like, hey, man, you know, I'm scared. I'm going to sell my coins for now until the no, stop that. Just go fucking move on in your life. Nobody gives a shit. You know, I feel like there are some very valid grievances. The arguments for removing the op return limit were very poor. Some big names waded in. They're also not ideal, like not very convincing arguments. But you know, there's a reality that filters don't work. You know, but you can also just do nothing. You know, like Jesus could just fucking do nothing. You don't have to do something. You know. You know, Core has been an absolute clusterfuck on how they handle users, businesses. You know, I think it's sort of like, maybe it's just like the more Gen Z sort of vibe to it, where, you know, they're not as tactful or as laid back and can handle the heat as easy. You know, again, they're losing the audience. You know, most of them are preoccupied with layer two. You know, there's a lot of that. And, you know, the people that don't care about layer two, well, you know, it's like they don't care about your preferences. Like it's, you know, Bitcoin's working, right? That's not to say that's not important to have layer two. Like none of these things are absolute, and there's many ways to look at them, right? And then you have the dot side that they went complete fucking batshit insane. Like, you know, like once you bring CSAM, I mean, like, you know, the conversation is over. Like, really, like it's, that's it. Just conversation is done. So yeah, I mean, that's where we're at now. It's like, you know, both sides are absolutely insufferable. And so my answer to that is I don't upgrade my node. And I recommend everybody just stop upgrading. This idea of upgrading software is like, this is Windows mentality. You know, like I come from, you know, the FreeBSD side. It's just don't upgrade. You know, I have servers running in 70 years, 10 years uptime. Like, I'm going to upgrade. It's not broken. There is no major vulnerability that matters. There is no major vulnerability in Bitcoin client that requires an update. You know, all the vulnerabilities are more sort of like of the category of like, yeah, they can crash your node. Yeah, well, start the laptop again, you know. And none of my nodes have been taken down. So, you know, clearly not a widespread problem. And, you know, most people are not running Lightning self-custodially, because self-custodial Lightning is fully broken, you know, to just being very honest. You know, Lightning is great. Custodial Lightning, fantastic, works. You know, upgrade those nodes. Yeah, I think I'll leave it at that. Otherwise, I'm just going to start inciting more hate towards me by just being a little bit more blunt.
No, fair enough. So, I mean, and again, this is, it's very funny. People automatically assume in this conversation that if you say something that is against what they view as against their opinion of how they perceive things to work, they view you as the enemy. You must be a shill for the other side, right? And when in reality, it's like, no, I can just think that, you know, the options on the table are not actually addressing the things that you think they're addressing. Like, I haven't upgraded my node in, I don't know, at least a year plus, maybe more. Like, that's what I've told people as well, is, you know, look, Bitcoin nodes are meant to be backwards compatible. Like each node implementation upgrade, like that's the whole thing. It needs to be backwards compatible, right?
Yep.
And so unless, as you said, there's a major, some sort of security vulnerability that's discovered, something like that, you shouldn't need to update your node. But if you want to, go for it. And if you want to run knots, go for it. Like, do whatever you want, but just be realistic about what that choice actually means. And if it is actually doing the things that you are being told it's doing in terms of you saving Bitcoin. And that's kind of where it's like, we should be able, yeah, like live and let live. Go touch grass. It's all going to be okay. Bitcoin is winning. And let's remember this. We are replacing a absolutely cluster-fucked fiat system. And this is, as messy as this might be in Bitcoin, man, it's still a heck of a lot better than that. And I feel like that is forgotten even by Bitcoiners, which is shocking. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did want to ask you just so more broadly, like, because I think we've said enough about the current current drama for now, and it's been just drained ad nauseum by so many people on so many podcasts. The last thing I'll say is I would love to know, like, also be scared to know the cumulative time that has been spent just like debating and rehashing these same points with people talking past each other. Like it's in terms of man hour years, like it's decades of cumulative time that have just been burned on this, but okay, whatever. Where do you sit on, more broadly, like zooming out a little bit, quote, upgrading Bitcoin versus maintaining Bitcoin? Are there privacy and scaling upgrades that you think need to happen and should happen in Bitcoin? Or are you more of the opinion that, hey, what we have works well, let's not mess that up. Let's focus on scaling on other, you know, other higher layers, let's say.
I think there's two things that must be very separated. One is consensus changes, the other one is non-consensus changes, right, to Bitcoin Core, the client. I mean, like, I really wish the, you know, and this is like idiotic of me to even think about, like, wishing that somebody else would do something is like, you know, it's like pissing in the wind, right? I mean, you know, like, who am I to wish the Core went in a different direction, right? I mean, like, I should just, like, you know, pull my sleeves and go do it myself, right? Like this is a full meritocracy, right? But if any Core person is listening, like, and I'll go build an indexer on Bitcoin Core. Like, it's nothing to do with consensus, but like, you know, we shouldn't need like Electrum server for SPV light nodes, right? Like, Bitcoin Core should have an indexer. Bitcoin Core should support BIP39. Like, there's a bunch of like low hanging fruit things that the market needs, business needs, right? That like would come a long way in also buying goodwill from industry, for the client. Now on consensus changes, I mean, you know, like there's personal preferences, but like, you know, maybe they're misguided for me too. Like, I mean, I'd love to have covenants just because I want to have on-chain vaults, right? Like I want the security to be not cold card based. I want the security to be Bitcoin, like block based, right? There's a lot of design space there, but unfortunately the covenant conversation gets hijacked by layer twos. You know, love to them. I know they need it, but like, you know, just talking from pure sort of selfish necessities, right? Like, you know, and I think that, you know, for example, the covenant discussions, you know, if they would go make the case for all these economic actors that they can have amazing on-chain vaults, you'd be a lot more palatable of a change than talking about how they want to pay for, you know, feeding chickens on the internet, right?
Can you talk a little bit about, just for folks who may not be totally familiar, the basics of what covenants are and how these on-chain vaults work? Because it's something that seems kind of like pretty cool to me, like has genuine, like it would be useful for, I mean, not just for businesses.
So right now, if you want, the spending condition right now is on the output, right? So, you know, like when you send it, like you're sending into a multi-sig address. Therefore, that address requires the two signatures for you to move to the next address. Right. What we're trying to do is the spending conditions to be on the input. So that means that you can move with spending conditions from that contract. So, for example, let's say, you know, you create a vault and that Bitcoin address itself knows that it cannot be spent unless it meets some conditions. I'm putting it very crudely to see if it sort of like makes sense. But the point is, we could create a vault saying, like, for example, the money doesn't move from here more than one Bitcoin a month, you know, counted in blocks, of course, but you know, that kinds of like amazing spending conditions, right? Like spending policies are how you find amazing security and still remain like functional, right? Because it's easy to put like, you know, a private key under the ocean and just leave it there. You know, it's very hard for somebody to get it, right? Now, if you have, you know, in order to become capable of signing and having security around that signing operationally, that's really where the magic is at, because that's where the trade-offs and the balances come in, right? And being able to do that with on-chain policies versus cold card policies would be a huge upgrade.
Yeah, I mean, and again, this seems like one of those things. I would assume there's not as much, let's say, general resistance to this. It's just there's maybe not as much general knowledge about this. Is that fair?
I mean, like there is some FUD around it. You know, there is some core FUD around the fact that there is no demand for it, which is absolutely absurd. You know, there was no demand for op return limit removal, you know, and that was changed. So that pisses me off. There is definitely like amazing applications that's already been demonstrated, you know, like as well as you can do without changing Bitcoin. I mean, there were some FUD around how, you know, like the governments can get into the covenants and whatever. Like, it's the same with multi-sig. They, you know, the government wanted to force you to be a cosigner, you know, of your keys or something. So, like, you know, idiotism. I mean, I don't, but it does change Bitcoin, which is like, I think the only fair, real sort of negative to it is like it changes Bitcoin, right? Like, now we have a fundamental change to it.
Do you think that it's actually something that can, like, is something that's going to be implemented eventually, but it's just going to take a lot more time just because of the fundamental nature of the change?
I don't know. Like, you know, some days I wake up thinking that we can still do some changes on Bitcoin. Some days I wake up saying that we're fully ossified. So I don't. I mean, the only change, there's only one change we have to make to Bitcoin. We have to fix the Unix time code. There is no choice on that. The day will come and it's going to have to be changed, period, or Bitcoin stops.
Can you, and again, just for folks, can you explain that one a little bit, just in layman's terms? That's like a pretty, I feel like that's like a not, a, that's not even a controversial one. That's just like this.
It's just the encoding. Right? Think about it. It's just like the encoding, right? Like old computers used to do the encoding of dates in a certain way, and they're done differently now, right? So in order to remain compatible with computers, you have to make, to fix that. It really is that. Think about it like the best way to think about it is like Y2K, right? If they had not fixed the computers, like, you know, some computers crashed. Like, it's similar to that.
Do you think, just on this topic of ossification, because I think people often get confused and think ossification is like some choice that happens. Like, okay, and now we'll ossify. But it's really not a choice, right? It's more of just a natural result of a process that happens. Is that a fair way to describe it? And I mean, I think you're kind of arguing maybe that we may already be at that point where we are sufficiently ossified, where we're just probably not going to change at any meaningful way at the consensus level. Is that your general base level assumption at this point?
I think the best way to look at it is maybe unpopular, but realistically speaking, Bitcoin really is as ossified as the people at the time are not into changing it. Because at the end of the day, you know, there is nothing preventing people from 50 years from now from changing the limit of Bitcoin.
You mean like tail emissions?
The supply. No, the supply, yeah. So, you know, there's nothing really holding them back. Right. So, you know, like, except for economic forces, right, that would say my family stacked all the way to now, fuck you, you're not going to change the limit, right? But the point is Bitcoin can be changed. It's not like it's written in stone somewhere and, you know, the humans around it can't go and just, you know, the humans can do whatever they want. They might fork off, they might not. So I think it's important to realize that, you know, for example, if we did like have a quantum advancement in, you know, 20 years from now, you know, that require a change, we might have to change Bitcoin, right? But that's something for the humans that are dealing with it at that time, to deal with it at that time. Like, you know, you can't control the future. Like, right. You know, It's like what trust lawyers always say, like, okay, you can set up your trust as tight as you want this way, but like, you can't really ruin your children after you're dead. They might figure out a way of breaking the trust rules. You know what I mean? It's like, you're dead. Get over it.
Do you think that there's any reasonable chance of a hard fork happening anytime in the near future? Like, is that something that's on your radar?
Unlikely. Extremely unlikely. Okay. No, it's not going to happen. Like, you know,
so
again,
no,
like,
no airdrop for us then.
Yeah. No, I mean, no, we could get airdrops. We can definitely get airdrops. But I mean, like, no, I don't think there'll be like a successful change to Bitcoin in the coming, in the near future. It's just not going to happen. It's, you know, and it's designed this way. Like, the more people who, you know, don't agree with each other, don't like each other, have different preferences than each other, you know, share the same rule set, share the same network, this less likely you're going to see changes happening, right? It's like getting, like, you know, Israelis and Palestinians to agree to turn the whole space into a massive Christian swimming pool. You know, like, both sides are going to say, fuck you, right? Like,
that's a good analogy.
Essentially, that's what I'm talking. Like, it's just you have more opposing sides sharing a concern, right? Like, you can't, like, it's very difficult to make a massive change that is unilateral by any side.
Do you think on the quantum side of things, because I've seen so many different opinions on this. Somebody, I don't know, recently, maybe it was just trolling, but was like, if we don't upgrade Bitcoin to be quantum resistant by next year, it's all over. And I'm like, well, okay.
Again, whenever people put a timeline or something or make an assumption about like a deadline in Bitcoin, they're literally full of shit and they're trying to take your coins. I mean, it really is that simple.
I mean, it's because, literally like it's phishing 101, right? Like from a social engineering perspective.
Think about it this way. Think about Bitcoin as a gigantic options market, right? Like it's like a, you know, we're all long, right? So like if it was true that quantum is problematic, you would see, you know, the people who have asymmetric information starting to sell. Right? Like, why would they tell anyone about, like, because they don't want the selling to happen while they're selling, right? They want the best price possible. So, you know, it's not, yeah, it's just, you know, it's a, like, the prediction market will go the other way, right? I don't think you have to worry about any of this stuff. And if this stuff sort of worries you, just turn off the internet and go focus on the stuff you understand.
Go touch some grass. I lied. I do. Right? I did have, just on the topic of touching grass, I do have one more question about the Core versus Knots debacle. Is Bitcoin going to die when Core V30 comes out?
I don't think so. I don't think it'll make any difference. I don't think, just for people to understand is that the majority of the network doesn't upgrade to new software. Like right away, ever, you know,
I don't
like unless they need the specific thing that's being changed. Like it's not, people don't upgrade, you know, it takes a long time for miners to upgrade. It's just stop worrying.
I had to get that one in there just to make sure, you know, this way, when Bitcoin dies, I'm going to point back and be like, you told me it would be okay. NVK, you right. Son of a gun. I'm kidding.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like, thankfully, it's not a securities law. This is a commodity, right? It's like we can speculate.
Speaking of securities, actually, I've got to say, so you started BitcoinTreasuries.net a while ago. I mean, it's been a number of years now. I don't know how long you've had the domain, but like the site's been active for several years, long before the current influx of Bitcoin treasury companies. Question one is, how many domains do you actually own, ballpark? And then question two is, were you ever skeptical that this would blow up the way it did, or did you kind of like know, like, yeah, this is going to be a hot domain?
No, I don't have any domains.
Did you lose those in a boating accident too?
That's right.
Okay.
So, you know, Bitcoiners like scarce things, right? It's the mindset. You can't help yourself. But remember, nobody owns domains. People rent domains. It's just like real estate. You rent domains. You stop paying, it goes away. Bitcoin is the only thing you actually own. So the treasuries, what's funny is that the treasury sort of like meme concept has been around since the very early days of Bitcoin. It's not a new concept. The idea is kind of simple. It's like any rational state actor, any rational economic actor that sees a better money will sort of acquire it, right? And like, you know, publicly traded companies are no different than that. It's just sort of like, again, it's like, I love that meme. Bitcoin, everything is working according to plan, right? Like, it really is just that. It's, you know, you have just people buying a better money, storing it, and then trying to figure out how to financialize it, because that's what Wall Street does. But, you know, even the publicly traded companies that don't financialize it, like they're just sort of sitting on a pile, there's lots of them that do that too. You win, because it's just, you know, Bitcoin appreciates faster than the dollar is dying, and then everything else. I mean, I mean, you can penny stock, you can gamble, but like with more predictable things, Bitcoin is the only thing that, you know, sort of is consistent in the last 16 years.
Yeah, I think a lot of people and myself, I play around with stocks occasionally with like a very small, like a hilariously small amount of money, just to remind myself of what a bad trader I am, and then be like, oh, yep, so you should have just put this in Bitcoin, you moron. With a few exceptions, but usually it's like, nope, should just put it in Bitcoin and lived your life, and you would have been better off in the long run. Should have been podcasting more instead of looking at those price charts. But I think that a lot of people like have perhaps come to that realization, even with these treasury companies, just because a lot of people bought in on top of the hype for some of these in the, you know, earlier this summer, and then have now watched Bitcoin kind of chug along sideways. Now Bitcoin rips, but during that time, treasury companies kind of took a little dip. But the other thing is, like, we're so early in this. Like, we're so early in Bitcoin broadly. Like, I don't think we're even out of the innovators phase, if you want to get into the tech adoption curve, right? Like, we're certainly not even close to the early majority, like not even close. And so I think it's going to be really fascinating to sort of see how this develops over the coming years. We're also, I think, about to enter a massive liquidity push environment, where like things have been, like, as far as fiat goes, things have been like relatively tight for the past couple of years. And I don't know, but it's going to get pretty crazy when they turn things back on. I don't know, maybe the government kind of just takes away more of the Fed's cartel autonomy and things get really interesting. I don't know. Are you, I mean, you don't have to answer this if you're not comfortable with it. Do you play around with these treasury companies at all, or are you just like focus entirely on stacking Bitcoin and obviously building your companies to stack more Bitcoin?
I mean, like, you know, I am a caveman Bitcoiner, right? So like, you know, the bolting accident did, and then, you know, never do anything different than that. But you know, like I do have, like, you know, some trading accounts that are part of my fiat lives. You know, like I do have other businesses and have other things going on. And sometimes you need things that are a little bit more like a fiat universe compatible, right? So yeah, I do own some of the stocks. I own other stocks. But the point is, you know, like the majority of the people out there, you know, they're not going to have a UTXO. You know, there is not enough UTXOs for everybody. I've done the math. There's a few tweets.
Like, yeah.
Seriously, like, there's just not enough UTXOs for everybody. There really isn't. Like, so the issue is, like, how do these people, like, you know, so they're not going to get the freedom, right? The self-sovereign part of Bitcoin. They're not going to enjoy that part. So, like, can they at least get some upside from the debasement, you know, against debasement, against everything else? So, you know, they will find sort of allegories to the Bitcoin, you know, play, right? They'll you know, if their pensions are exposed to, you know, like, partially to Bitcoin through a Bitcoin treasuries company, like, at least their pensions don't go to zero, right? I mean, like, you know, like, I think, like, because the doomerist brain is very lazy, right? Like, they are not trying to find solutions. They're just pointing out problems, right? So it's very easy to go to, oh, my God, civil war and 60102 and this and that and everybody shooting each other. But it's not how the world works, right? Like, there's a lot of inertia. Even during big wars, I mean, like, the majority of the populations in the countries that were not being the ones being bombed, like, it was life as usual, you know? And so you know, if I think we're going to end up, unless we have, like, some crazy black swans that God knows what happens, right? But, you know, I think what we have is, like, some sort of, like, a peaceful, slow, like, monetary replacement. You know, it's the great replacement.
You got to be careful with that one. That,
yeah, I know.
I don't know if that gets you in trouble anymore on the internet, but this YouTube will add a flag to this later.
That's like, right.
The great replacement theory. Yeah, you can beep it for YouTube. It's a conspiracy theory.
That's right. No, beep it for YouTube. I don't care. But the point is, you know, like I think, you know, it's in everybody's interest to have the majority of the world at peace, right? Because even if you profit from war, right? Like even if you're like a Soros type, right? And you're like, you know, like, fuck yeah, like let's Raytheon the fuck out of the other country, right? Even if you profit from war, it's like war over there. You still don't want war where you live. You know, you still want peace where you live. So it's in everybody's interest to sort of like change the wheel of this car while it's still driving. Right? It's going to be tricky. But, you know, it's already happening when you think about it, right? Like, you know, people don't save in dollars anymore. They save in dollar-denominated stocks, right? Like, people's savings are in stocks or they are in commodities, right? So like, we've already, like, demonetized the dollar in that sense, right? Like, it's just that we still need a unit of account, and that's what the military comes in, right? Like when Americans say, you know, my taxes, you know, like what does the military do? Well, they make sure you have the unit of account. It's worth a lot, and it costs a lot of money to maintain the unit of account. You know, is that a good thing? Probably not. It's not great, but that's why you can buy a TV for cheap, delivered the same day from Amazon in your own currency, right?
It is incredible. Same day Amazon delivery just never ceases to blow my mind.
You can't have Amazon same day for cheap without the army. Like, it doesn't work like that, right? Like, the wealth would have been more distributed or it would have shifted somewhere else. So the point is, like, you know, the treasury companies, you know, like, they're just a backdoor into the system. It really is. It's like we are infecting the financial system. It's not the way around, right? Like, you can still hold your Bitcoin. Like, nobody's preventing you from doing that. I literally make products for us to do that, right? Like, I mean, it doesn't get more caveman than a cold card. But, like, you know, and that's why I'm at the two sides of this spectrum. It's like, you know, like, I think we need to financialize and backdoor into the system so that we don't have, like, fucking civil wars, right? So that everybody enjoys the benefit of number go up, even if they don't own Bitcoin, right? And on the other side, we can have our freedom and be cavemen, you know, like, that don't have to participate in the system in a certain way. I think that's a much healthier way to go about it, and it's clearly playing out. So, you know, I hope I'm not wrong and things don't change.
I mean, things could undoubtedly get very messy, and I think will. Like, I don't think it's necessarily, I mean, if you subscribe to the fourth, you know, general fourth turning theory, like, we're undoubtedly in the midst of one. There's a lot of other cycles that appear to be converging right now as well, whether societal, economic, or otherwise. Things could and probably will get extremely messy, but we have these incredible tailwinds that we've never had before, which are Bitcoin, and I think AI is an important one to mention as well. Like, you've got deflationary money and probably the most deflationary technology to exist thus far in terms of AI. And it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out, because the fiat world doesn't work when everything gets cheaper forever. Like, it needs things to get more expensive forever. It's kind of like part of it. Flat screen TVs just happen to be able to outpace inflation and continue to deflate, which is, you know, incredible. For us as a consumer, like, that's the beauty of the pseudo free market that we have, right? Is that we can keep getting certain things cheaper.
I mean, it's just
that
the marginal cost of production of most things go to, you know, not zero, but it goes to, you know, as low as you can, right? Like, and as we come up with solutions to get around scarcities, right? Like, it gets even cheaper. So, you know, like, you have materials that were scarce and no longer scarce. You know, we're going to get, gold is going to have its day too. You know, we're going to get to a point where gold is no longer scarce. You know, like, they keep on finding more gold, and, you know, eventually, you know, it's worth minus some astronomical, you know, it's like, But you know, like a lot of these things have these problems because they have utility value. You know, utility value is not a good thing. It is a terrible thing because it creates a market like for that product to be sold. When like, you know, Bitcoin, the only utility value for Bitcoin is holding it, you know, and exchanging it. But there is nothing else. Anyways, we're all going to be fine.
Yeah, I always appreciate, you know, having a conversation with you, NBK, is like going outside and touching grass a little bit. It's always very calming. I do want to talk about stuff that you guys are building right now, because I know you have your hands in a lot of different pots. You want to talk a little bit maybe on the hardware side first, just kind of what you guys have released recently, what you're cooking up for the future?
So like for people that don't know, we make the cold card, right? Like the mimetic quintessential Bitcoin hardware wallet that everybody uses. I think the main thing that like I've noticed in this last sort of like few years is that like it's very clear to me that, you know, like there is interesting competition out there, but it's very clear that like people don't use Bitcoin. Like the majority of the products out there, the thing that it's just from people that don't use Bitcoin. You know, so I don't see things coming out, and you know, we just keep on iterating. I was like, how can we make Bitcoin more usable, operationally speaking, to Bitcoiners trying to send base layer money safely, securely, and pass on to their children, right? And I think that's really where like this last feature was born from. So you know, you have your hardware wallet, everybody has one, right? And, you know, including your cold card, you go and, you know, you can send your whole amount out, right? And that's not a good thing, right? Because, you know, even though you give you trick pins to break it, to work it out, and, you know, you can delay login and whatever, at the end of the day, that device is allowing you to just send it all. And that could be to a bad person, right? Under duress. So what we did recently was to add spending conditions to an extra key for multi-sig. But we saw the demand and saw it sort of like the light there where what people really want is the hardware wallet to say, no, you can't spend more than this. Or you can't send to an address that is not on this list, right? And so what we did is we created a system for spending policies inside the hardware wallet itself. So the hardware wallet can prevent you from doing things that you don't want yourself to do in certain situations, right? So you can set up your cold card to now not let you spend more than one Bitcoin, you know, per transaction. You can make the cold card not let you spend without a two-factor authentication from a different device. Not let you... So there's velocity, magnitude, so like not spend more than a certain amount, period. And also whitelist. Whitelists are very important because you can have a operational cold card that's maybe like your warmer device that sits on your desk for you to operate your business or for your if you're a trader. And then it can have only the whitelist that go to maybe your other cold card that's deep under a mountain or go to your exchange account. You know, things like that. So you can have a list of whitelisted addresses. And you know, like this helps people travel as well. So you can have a traveling cold card now. You know, it has spending limits. So, you know, you can't be forced to, you know, do something you don't want to do. And it's more like it really is within those. And can we do this without an app? You know, so that we don't have to depend on Apple, we don't have to depend on more software stacks. Can we do this without a server so that you don't have to talk to anyone or anything? You don't have to talk to CoinKite. And so we spent a lot of time making that work with just a device. There's no counterparties on that spending policy.
I think that's pretty incredible. I mean, so I'd also like to know just your opinion, I mean, on multi-sig kind of broadly, because obviously you guys do not, still to this day, do not have any sort of, you don't do any sort of software. Like you don't provide the client to use as, you know, the correct software interface. That's one of your kind of big things. Yeah. It's been like very purposeful on your guys' side. ColdCard is obviously used by a ton of people. It's used in a lot of multi-sig setups as well, especially for people that want some sort of vendor diversity in terms of, you know, they want a couple other brands and they want a ColdCard in there as well. What are your thoughts? Because obviously some of these things that you're talking about in terms of these features that you've enabled, they're almost their own form of multi-sig, but already just built into the actual device itself. Do you think that, like, what do you think is the appropriate setup for most people? I'm not asking you to like say this is what everyone should do, but like for most people, what do you think is the best way to go about that?
This is funny. So like we actually have the most comprehensive multi-sig support on the market. Every possible multi-sig craziness fully supported, which is funny. So, and we actually have spending policies for multi-sig as well. So I think the reality is this, like we need optionality, right? Because different people have different needs, and also people have different needs themselves. So like, you know, the same way you have like a spending wallet, you have a travel wallet, you have a checking account, you have a savings account, you have a trading account, you have, you know, like a gold bar account. Do you know what I mean? It's like, when you think about that, like, you know, okay, so how can we provide that functionality to people through our devices? Because we have those needs as users. Like pretty much like, almost all features that ColdCard have are a need of our own. We're very selfish with that. We make the products for ourselves. And then hopefully people get used to of it as well.
But you are a Bitcoin business. Like you operate Bitcoin businesses. Like you know exactly what Bitcoin businesses and users need because you operate one and you are the other. Like that, you know, makes sense.
Exactly. So, you know, I think like the great majority of people, you know, outside of Twitter, you know, outside of the spotlight, they're more than well served by single sig. You know, plain vanilla single sig, most people can keep a metal plate secure and secret. Okay. You know, would you put your whole life savings on it? Probably not, right? Like that's where you start sort of doing a little bit of game theory on your own life, right? Like how much, it's the same as having a gold bar, you know, in your safe in your house or something, right? Like how much gold did you have in your house, right? Like you can answer those questions.
Not all of your gold, hopefully.
Exactly, right? So think about single sig in that sense, right? Like how much would you have on hand or accessible to you, right? Same with cash. How much would you have? Because cash burns, right? Like it gets tricky. So, you know, so now we can add, say, like a passphrase. Passphrase with single sig is like remarkable, right? Now it's plausibly deniable. It's super simple. Pretty much every wallet supports it. You know, like if somebody captures your seed plate, it's okay. It's not the end of the world because they don't have the passphrase. You know, you can put the passphrase in a different location. It's fairly simple for inheritance as well because it's just, you know, it's just two little secrets for you to sort of pass on. You know, so like that goes a long way in terms of like amount of money and people's circumstances, right? Now, you know, like you live maybe in a more dangerous neighborhood, right? Like, well, you know, now you have to start thinking a little bit more broadly on this, right? Like you need to think about like how, you know, maybe, you know, like a duress could be a bigger sort of concern for you, right? So you start thinking about what can you do around that? Is it some trick pins? Is it a delay pin? Is it like maybe multi-sig and you can't sign it alone in that place, right? You know, now are you a business? Well, businesses are different needs, right? Like maybe you need multiple people to sign something. You know, with the spending policies for multi-sig, that was for business because, you know, now you can have like one, like same wallet. Okay. So one business partner can sign up to a certain amount, you know, the other business partner can sign up to a certain amount and, but together they can sign everything. You know, like how amazing is that,
it's
right?
Like the nuclear codes where you got to have two guys each with their key. I mean, it's literally that. Yeah.
Yes. And it's super useful. And that's all device based. You don't need servers. You don't need anything. Don't need to pay a company. Don't need to pay a subscription, nothing. Like, and you don't have to exist either. Like it could be completely anon, right? Because you don't have to, you know, work with a collaborative multi-sig company, which is not a bad thing either. It really depends on what you need, right? we're very intense and reflective about these ideas. How far can we take a embedded device in terms of operational security and being operationally capable without needing a service or an app? Because service are attack surface and a privacy attack surface, and apps are an attack surface because, you know, now you have the same vendor showing you the address. So, you know, and that's sort of like that's the space we live in. And I think we got to a point now where it's, you know, it's hilariously simple to set up a cold card, to transact a cold card. You know, as much as people love to, like, you know, say things are hard, it's, you know, things are hard because they're trying to sell you something else. You know, it's, you know, we have plenty of examples of the grandma, right? The Bitcoiners grandma that they taught how to use Bitcoin, right? Like, it's like the ephemeral grandma that, you know, probably doesn't exist, but still, like, there's a lot of those examples of people that managed to get that through. And I think there is another part that's very important, is that we don't compromise on the necessity for the person to understand what they're doing. Because, you know, like, you should not have Bitcoin if you're not willing to understand what you have now, right? Like, you should not have gold in your house if you don't understand what gold is. It is not safe, and you're going to get scammed. You know, for example, like Ledger, right? Like, they do a very good job of security. You know, some good people there, very professional people. They really try to make it very easy. They have an app wallet that's very easy to use. But the problem is, you abstract so much of what's happening from the user that then the user gets a DM from a scammer saying, "Hey, give me your seed." "Okay, here's my seed." You know, I'm the support people. Give me your seed and I'll help you, right? So
whenever
this is
I
the
hear
issue.
Those stories, I'm like, how? Why? No,
this
stop.
Is the majority of the people who lose Bitcoin. You know, it's because, again, like, they're not being forced to understand what they have, right? And part of our flow, even though it's simple, it requires people to have some agency, right? We believe that that's our responsibility. I really want to bang this point, is that, like, if you're not willing to understand Bitcoin, go buy MicroStrategy. You know, go buy some ETF. Go buy, you know, like, shares in a company that has Bitcoin. Go do something else. You know, like, Bitcoin is for people. Like, having UTXOs with a signing device, okay, it's for people who want to take responsibility over their money, because it's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah. If you can't open a PDF, buy the Bitcoin ETF. That's what I always say, you know?
That's funny.
Yeah, it's not bad. I think that that's fair. I think that may sound harsh to some people. Like, no, come on, Bitcoin should be for everyone. But I think this, I'm not the first nor the last to make this distinction, but, like, Bitcoin's not for everyone. It's for anyone who is willing to learn and do the work. Like, because it is scary. Like, it is scary to have self-custody of your wealth. We're not used to that. Again, this is not a thing in the fiat system that you can do. You can't self-custody digital dollars. It's impossible. You can self-custody physical dollars, and that has its own set of risks, right? You can self-custody gold, but most people don't. And most people don't self-custody their digital dollars. Most people have a custodian for any meaningful amount of wealth. It's a weird thing. It's a weird thing that we're doing in this Bitcoin space where you are the one, the buck stops with you. And if you screw up, there's no customer service to call. There's no, let me just reverse that transaction for you. No. It's not how it works. Like, you're done. And I think that for most people, that is scary, which is why, to your earlier point about, you know, hey, there's not going to be enough UTXOs for everyone, right? It's like, I don't know if there needs to be enough UTXOs for everyone. Like, it's because everyone doesn't want that responsibility, to be honest with you. I don't know if that sounds too harsh too, but I don't think everyone wants that. I think most people want to be able to call a custodian when something goes wrong. I think that that's because that's what they've been trained to do. It's scary to take self-custody. It requires taking true ownership, And like you said earlier, Bitcoin's the only thing that you can own, and you really own it. If you like, you have the keys, you have the coins. And if you screw that up, those coins are gone. And that's an understandably scary thing for, I think, probably the vast majority of the population.
Yeah. It's, you know, again, it's you can't, like, it's like driving, right? You know, Bitcoin self-custody is literally like driving, okay? Nobody learns in the highway, right? People go in a parking lot where the stakes are low. They learn how to drive. There's a lot of people who shouldn't be driving. You know, if you're driving your family, now you have your whole family in your car and their lives are at risk. Your responsibility, right? If you're driving a bus, it's a lot of responsibility. You're holding a lot of people's lives, right? You know, if you don't want to drive, you do take the bus. You know, it's like, you know, if you don't want to have Bitcoin self-custody, but take the bus, you know, go with somebody else, have a custodian hold it for you, you know, but I think it's important to also have honesty around the trade-offs, right? There is a lot of solutions out there. There's a very dishonest sort of way. It's like, you know, you're safer here, or you do this or whatever. It's just, no, like there is no honesty in the marketing about what they're doing, right? But, you know, we can't change that. I mean, that's just the reality of the market, right? And people need to get burned to understand sometimes, or people need to get sued or whatever, right? So we continue trying to educate people, build the right tools. I think we're fortunate that we are in a market that there is a lot of people. I mean, like, you know, the amount of devices to sell is pretty insane. You know, and we can remain sort of like a company with a fairly sort of opinionated view of how self-custody should be done and still sell devices. Like, that to me gives me hope about Bitcoin, right? Like, in terms of self-custody in that sense. That, like, you know, if we can exist, there is enough people.
Yeah. No, that's it's fair. I'm curious, too. I think a lot of people probably have, even if they, they've probably heard about CoinKite and ColdCard, but they've probably seen a block clock. I've got to say I've got a couple of them, a couple of the minis and then like the micro minis or whatever, the extra small ones, because they're just awesome. Are you guys ever going to put out like another one? Is there any way to top that? Because it's a beautiful piece of Bitcoin design at play there, right? It's just, I don't know. It's satisfying. It's nice to have.
Yeah, you know, that again, there was a born about, you know, because we wanted to see the block height. We wanted to see seeing the block height around the house is very peaceful. Like, it's a very satisfying thing. Like, you know, it's like people can be crying out there, the world can be this, life can be that, but like, it's like TikTok next block, right? Like, there is another block. There's always another block. And I find that like super soothing. And so that's really one of the main reasons why we made the device. You know, there was the old one. I don't know if you've ever seen the other one that has the digits that flip.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago. You know, we'll probably, like, when we come up with the next idea that is not just a screen showing something, you know, we'll probably make something. I think the biggest barrier is just the idea for the next one that is like an interesting technology, because it needs to have a soul, right? It needs a little artistic flair. You know, the device was the current one, the Block Clock Mini, the one that has the seven digits. I mean, like, you know, it's very artistic in the sense that, like, from the hardware perspective, it's like people don't do that. Like, you don't put seven displays on something. Yeah. You put one display. You know, so like we were silly putting seven displays onto something. So we need the next idea of like the right technology for it.
Eight displays, nine.
There you go.
I've got one block clock that I had unplugged during a move a couple of years ago. It's still at Bitcoin at 28,000. And I'm just leaving that one. I'm just leaving that one as a reminder of where we came from, and that I should have bought more sats when Bitcoin was down there. It's a nice reminder, but it's a little bit painful, but it's also like, wow, things can change fast in Bitcoin, you know?
Yeah. No, it's fun. E-inks are fun that way. They don't, the image doesn't change once it powers off. Right. So yeah. It remains.
It's nice. I want to ask you, too, about just, okay, not everybody can have UTXOs. Fair. I do think at a certain point, everybody will use Bitcoin in some way, right? But, you know, maybe without knowing they're using Bitcoin. What are your thoughts? You mentioned Lightning earlier that you think that really it's not necessarily feasible except for in the kind of larger hub and spoke custodial model. I'm putting hub and spoke in your mouth there. You didn't actually say those words. But I'm curious of just your larger thoughts on Lightning. Also on eCash and where you think there's been obviously a lot of development happening there with what Cali is doing with Cashew. Where are you at with that? Do you think that's something that becomes, I mean, obviously there are trade-offs and everyone, the developers themselves obviously acknowledge these. Cali will be the first to tell you like, look, you can get rugged. But do you think that those are tools that at least get people in the right direction towards having something that does have you know, much better privacy and a very nice user experience compared to a lot of fiat tools? Yes, there are trade-offs, but it's still, again, better than kind of the fiat shit show that we have today. I'd love to get your thoughts on those layers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, you know, like, again, custodial Lightning works great. It really does, you know, because it sort of, it makes up for the trade-offs in terms of practical usability, right? And, you know, there is a lot of improvements on custodial Lightning, so it's less, it's more private and less in need of KYC. So, for example, Lightspark, is it Lightspark? I think it's Lightspark. You know, they do some state chain stuff, right? So, like, they can get away with some things, and they make different trade-offs. So, you know, they can offer that solution so that clients that use Lightspark as the backend for their Lightning don't, for example, need to KYC users, right? So you get a better privacy set there, right? Like we need instant payments, right, that are sort of Bitcoin-backed, right? I think it's unfortunate that it took so long for Lightning alternatives to start coming up. Right, because we need competition on the market, right? So now we have Arc. Arc makes different trade-offs. You know, I want to see how it plays out, but I'm very bullish on it. Like I am bullish on Lightning Custodio. You know, there is Cashew is amazing, but Cashew requires Lightning for the settlement of the mints, right? So, you know, I hope that they turn on like base layer Cashew funding at some point. I know they don't because a person could just unilaterally deposit how much money they want on a mint and then it could become a problem. But, you know, there's nothing technically preventing people from having Cashew being base layer funded. You know, and Cashew in a way kind of starts to behave almost like hub and spoke, right? Because they have one fat channel, you know, a few fat channels between mints and other Lightning big players. And then they have the spoke really is the Cashew, right? Which is like a Bitcoin unit of account, Bitcoin denominated unit. Cashew itself is not Bitcoin, right? Like it's just a token.
It's an eCash token.
Exactly. But Kali's brilliancy there was to make it so that his implementation is integral to being Bitcoin backed, right? Like you can't use Cashew doesn't exist with shitcoins. Like Cashew exists because it's fully integrated with the Bitcoin stack, right? And it works great, you know. But again, different trade offs, and you know, you could say Cashew is custodial, right? Because of the mint. But, you know, but then you can have a million mints. So even if 1,000 mints rug you, you know, the other, you know, 999,000 mints didn't. So you're still fine, right? So, yeah, I mean, like, there's a lot of stuff happening. But the reality is, like, people outside of North America are poor. They can't. Like they don't, even in North America, actually, like people just don't have money, right? Like, and Bitcoin is terrible money for people that don't have money.
Like, oh, that's going to ruffle some feathers right there.
You know, and that's why credit cards are very big market, is because credit cards give people 30 days or a lot more with interest, right? But you have 30 days without interest, right? Like, it's very similar to payday loans, right? Like, it gives people like that minimum operating period before they get their next paycheck, right? And that's what people need. It's like they don't use credit cards just because it's easy to pay. It is now. It didn't used to be this easy to pay with credit cards, right? It's just, it's very easy now because it became the currency, because nobody has money. So the two things just merged, right? But reality is that people need credit. You know, you look at like all the checkouts now have like, you know, Affirm or whatever, like pay with
it's
12
insane.
Days. Yeah, but you know,
like for your groceries, like
yeah. But you know, this is new to Americans, but the rest of the world functions like this. In Brazil, you have 24 months without interest on most things.
Really?
Yes. They figure out the economics to make it happen. It's not even baked in.
Yeah.
It's not like there's a different price. No. They just figure out, because there is no business if you don't offer terms.
It's interesting because, like, on the other side of the world, like a lot of places in Eastern Europe, like it is predominantly done on a, you know, a cash basis or like debit, you know, debit card basis. Like, there's still, obviously it's not solely the case, but even just like the way that most people will buy houses up until more recently was more focusing on cash based. Like, but there's different traumas, like generational traumas there, right? That have caused them to want to do that and to have less trust of centralized credit. So like, it's interesting. But yeah, I think it is crazy to me. Like the first time I walked into a store and saw that it was like, oh, you know, pay over 4 months with whatever Affirm or one of these other companies, I was like, oh my God, like this is, we're financing a sandwich here. This is insane.
It's nuts, but you know, that's the reality people have, right? I mean, you know, when we fix the money and we fix the world, you know, like when we get to the other side of this, then maybe, you know, people will have like better money and they won't need credit and they're going to do better, right? But realistically speaking, like you can't have a modern consumerist society without credit. Like, you know, Bitcoin does not solve that problem. Like, not right now. It solves on the other side of it. But it's going to take a very long time, right? And I think Bitcoiners can't wrap their head around it because, you know, a lot of them are savers, just naturally savers, you know, people who have different value set, right? That often makes them have more money in the bank account. So when they want to buy something, they have the cash, right? And that's not the reality of, you know, the great majority of the world's population, including of their own countries, right? Like, it's just, you know, you're going to have to accept. Ideally, Visa would be, you know, or Amex would be running on a Bitcoin standard and there would be better companies and, you know, like, you know, they would be able to lower the interest rates. You know, there's like a whole other universe to look this from, right? But you know, it is what it is.
I do like seeing the Bitcoin rewards credit cards out there because that's at least something where it's like, oh, sweet. Because airline miles are literally just like the biggest scam ever in terms
yes.
of like it's like fiat to the extreme on top of base layer fiat. It's just like such a scam. And so at least, you know, spending credit and getting some sats on the side is nice. I think we'll see a lot more of that happening. And I think there's also, to your point, like people want credit, people need loans. You've seen a lot of companies now start offering these, you know, offering Bitcoin loans. Like that's great. You know, Strike has made a big deal about this. They're obviously not, you know, the only ones. There's a lot of them out there. Ledin, Debify, like a bunch of these other ones that offer Bitcoin loans. And I think that's a good thing. People obviously want it. There's obviously a market demand for it. Otherwise, the products would not exist and people wouldn't use them. And so it's like, you know, like us being on a Bitcoin standard doesn't mean that credit is just non-existent anymore.
I mean, like, like we exist in a world where we're competing with cheap money, right? So, you know, Bitcoin hurdle rate is amazing, you know, like but we're not like doing a million X a year, right? So we have to, you know, as a Gen Xer or as a Gen Z or whatever is now, like, you're competing for that house, right, on a market that has, you know, monetized real estate, right? So, like, and you have to have a house to live in, right? So like, depending on where you live, like renting may not be optional, right? So you have to either move or buy a house, right? And to buy the house, you don't want to sell the BTC, you know, and maybe you don't have access to like, you know, like bank credit, right? So, you know, like, so the next best thing out of that very long list of the things you've tried, you know, can't move, you know, don't want to sell the BTC, don't have bank credit. Well, I'm going to take a loan against the BTC, right? Does that incur risk? Absolutely. Right. But is that risk maybe better than not having the BTC? Yeah. You know, and if you do that very conservatively, like you should be able to be fine. Right.
Especially the capital gains treatment. Like if you need to sell Bitcoin to buy something and you've got to pay the capital gains on top, it's like, God, you're just literally just getting kicked in the balls by the government just repeatedly.
Well, that's another reason why people buy Bitcoin strategy stocks, is because stocks are very compatible with the fiat system. You can walk into your bank and say, loan me X amount of money versus my trading book. You know, like your literal corner bank can do it, right? You know, and they're going to offer you better interest rates than any Bitcoin collateral company would, right? It's just because you're part of the system, right? Bitcoin is not compatible with the system yet, but you will be. You know, once, you know, your fucking Merrill Lynch offers you Bitcoin-backed loans, I'm not saying you should put your Bitcoin there. You definitely shouldn't, because those assholes are going to take it somehow. But they're going to create an environment where, you know, Landon or Strike are going to have even better interest rates to give to you, because Merrill Lynch is their new competition now.
And we're seeing Bitcoin insurance now too, like, which is, I think, pretty cool to see. Like, it's fantastic. Like, people, these are, again, products that the market wants, and there are now Bitcoin companies. And that's the nice thing too, is like these companies that are existing right now, either providing these loans, providing insurance, whatever they are, they're not TradFi companies that are then pivoting to this. They're Bitcoin companies that are the first movers in this space and are there before the JP Morgans and the Citibanks and the Merrill Lynches and everything else. And ultimately, I think that that's a great thing. Like, that's, you know, that ultimately means that it's those companies are necessarily going to be more mission aligned with the average Bitcoiner than Jamie Dimon's, you know, JP Morgan. Like, that's
exactly
just that's a no-brainer.
Yeah. I mean, it really is that simple. And we also can cross borders now, right? Like, you can go hodo-hodo and make a private loan contract with some other crazy Bitcoiner in another part of the universe, right? And like, you know, your chances of capture, privacy issues or whatever, like, greatly de-risked, right? There is a lot of paths. And the more we become compatible is the wrong way. The wrong analogy. The more we become interfaceable with the fiat system, the better it is for Bitcoin. A politician can no longer wake up in the morning and go, oh, Bitcoin should be legal in America. Don't tank the market. Right? Like, why? Like, if it was just a bunch of crazy Bitcoiners, like, they could totally do it and they'll get away with it. Right? They can't do that when, like, you know, teachers' pensions depend on it. Like, that's moat for us. Like, you should be celebrating that. You know, it's just be celebrating anybody. Like, you may not like the person buy Bitcoin, but it's demand. And demand makes your bags more defended, right? You know, it's a hard pill to swallow to some people.
It's a symptom of success, right? It's a symptom of Bitcoin winning. Like, this is what winning looks like. This is what winning feels like. It means your enemies stacking sats as well. And it means the suits coming in, and it means governments wanting to stack this, and it means more acceptance by the traditional finance system. Like, if Bitcoin was losing, if Bitcoin sucked, no one would care. But it doesn't suck. It's amazing. Everybody wants it. And that's why they do care. So, like, it's a symptom of that winning. I do want to be conscious of your time, NVK. If you got time for one more, I just kind of wanted to ask your thoughts broadly on, like, the state of Nostr right now and where you're at with it. What's your vibe on it? You've obviously been active on Nostr for quite some time, actively built some products around there as well. But yeah, I don't know. What's your vibe on it?
Yeah, it's just like Bitcoin, right? Like it's the adoption cycle is not linear. So, you know, you have spikes. There's a lot being built. Like, Primo is remarkable. Like, I mean, like you know, you look at something like that because you need an example, right? And like that's a great one. It's like, look, it's like practically like Twitter. Like, I mean, you can't tell the difference. Half the times I can't tell the difference which app I'm in, right? It's just that one app I can send sats, the other one I can't. You know, we're streaming right now on Noster, right? I think it's a very necessary protocol. We need a communication protocol that doesn't require permission, a permanent identity system that doesn't require permission. You know, people are building. There's a lot coming. There's white noise coming. It's great. It's a signal replacement that needs to exist. There is, I think, Universe is another app, kind of like Discord thing, where it's like, you know, people have communities. There's a lot being built. It takes time. You know, it's the adoption and the interest and the volume of users using it, the DAO is going to differ and it's going to come and go. But, you know, right now, Elon is a nice, benevolent dictator with Twitter, right? Like, we don't know what that's going to be like in a few years, right? Like, and you can't depend on that. So I always say to people, like, at a bare minimum, just have a backup. You know, build an account where, you know, you have some interactions, you have a following, you have followers. You know, you have a place to go to in case you get canceled, right? Because it could happen. And then there's all the other stuff that, like, it's just not possible to do, like zapping people on Twitter or whatever, right? Like, there's a lot that's going to start to get built and come out that is just things that were not possible. It's not just like we're just sort of like trying to run away from those places. We're going to now build things that are like just not possible to build on those places, right? It's just possible on Noster. I'm very bullish on it. It's just, you know, it's going to take a long time.
Is there a particular, whether it be some sort of new social engagement layer, you know, social networking layer, or something else, a particular advancement or product, service, app, whatever on Noster that you are most looking forward to personally?
I think white noise is a big one. I you know, Signal is like makes a lot of decisions that I can't for the life of me understand. Like, you know, it took them, you know, years to not like dox their phone number to people, for example. You know, they refuse to accept Bitcoin. They want their shitcoin there. You know, they don't allow you to have more than one device, like more than one phone. Like, why is this related to my phone number? I don't want phone number. You know, if you want to de-spam, because phone numbers help with de-spamming, you know, like, sure, check once, but like, let me move on from phone numbers, right? You know, there's a bunch of reasons that like it must be replaced. You can't have like, you know, like chats are a great way of dealing with servers, like as a server interface. So like a chatbot kind of thing. And, you know, you can't have a client for the server on Signal. It's like fully closed. You know, it's anyways, there's a lot of, they do a lot of things right. So much so that I use it personally a lot, but like I'm looking forward to the next iteration of like maybe some fresh ideas and a little bit more freedom, right? And I think white noise does that. White noise uses MLS, which is the evolution of the Signal protocol for privacy and secret messaging, but it integrates with Noster, so you don't need servers.
Yeah.
How amazing is that, right? I'm looking forward to that. Jeff G is working on that. It's I think my next super needed app.
Yeah, I mean, it's also one of those things where being able to open source it and make it available for folks, because like Signal, there's a pretty good chance with some of the upcoming laws, you know, in Europe. I forget when are they voting on that that new like backdoor encryption law. They're voting on it, I think, on like the 12th or 13th of October, where in the EU they may force messaging providers to give them a backdoor even to encrypted messaging, which is like, oh, okay. And Signal basically said they're going to, you know, get out of there. I know you got to jump. So let's close this out. Where do you want to send folks?
Just I want to send them out of Twitter. I want to send them to the park near their houses, you know, like stock the sets, go walk on grass, fuck all this noise, go enjoy your life, go build things, go be productive, you know, and, you know, get yourself a cold card, stick the money in it and move on. Like, it really is that simple. Like, it's just so simple. It's so simple that people cannot believe how simple it is, right? So they have to complicate it. Just you know, stack the sats, you know, and go live your life.
That is fantastic advice. NVK, thanks for coming on here. I'm going to cut this now. Thanks to everyone who joined in the live stream as well. Appreciate you guys. Peace.
Thanks for having me.
And that's a wrap on this Bitcoin Talk episode of The Bitcoin Podcast. Remember to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're watching or listening, and share it with your friends, family, and strangers on the internet. Find me on Nostr at primal.net/walker and this podcast at primal.net/titcoin. On X, YouTube, and Rumble, just search at Walker America. And find this podcast on X and Instagram at Titcoin Podcast. Head to the show notes to grab sponsor links. Head to substack.com/@WalkerAmerica to get episodes emailed to you. And head to bitcoinpodcast.net for everything else. Bitcoin is scarce, but podcasts are abundant. So thank you for spending your scarce time listening to The Bitcoin Podcast. Until next time, stay free.